Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 213, featuring an old friend of mine, Felix Urquiza, and Dallas Carroll from Digital Giant. And I've worked with Felix for many years back in the VFX world, where he and I did a bunch of commercials, including a lot of car commercials. And he's sort of gone into a little new adventures over at Digital Giant, kind of a startup idea. They opened an LA office. I think they have offices in other places around the world, but they opened an LA office here with Dallas, and Felix is one of the first people there to go there. And both of them talk about the work they're doing in the digital car world. Digital cars are fascinating, actually. I've done a lot of car commercials. They have got their own language, their own requirements. It's actually it's kind of a specialty in the world of CG. But what they have focused on is to use a lot of new technology that they've come up with to try to make that world as efficient as possible. And through those efficiencies, new ideas have emerged. They mentioned something, for example, where talk about technology where they're able to capture lighting down a road as fast as you can drive a car. And that really makes the lives of digital car work extremely easy. But you can easily see how that technology that they've done will actually apply to anything that needs to use CG lighting. They do a lot of interesting things in terms of going real time as well and what that real time world will mean. I'm really interested in that. One of the things that's fascinating is their conversation about on-demand content delivered. And if you think about on-demand content delivered in the social media platform, which is something else they discuss, that's actually fascinating as well. So I'm fascinated by what they're doing. I think they're developing some interesting technology that's making things very, very efficient and really cool. So I'm looking forward to talking to them for quite a while about some new ideas and things that we can work on together with them. So really, really cool conversation. All right. I don't really have any announcements to say this week because there's a lot of stuff coming out. So next week, I promise you we'll have a lot of announcements in terms of some product releases, etc. But I do want to remind you about our event happening in Sofia named Total Chaos. We're very excited. This is our second year of doing Total Chaos, and it'll be a gangbuster of people showing up. So very, very excited about that. It is happening on May 16th, 17th, and 18th. The 16th is going to be masterclasses, and then the talks, all the big talks will happening on 17th and 18th. So hopefully we will see you there. I know everyone from the LA office will be going, which is exciting. And so I will be at in Sofia in May, which is actually a wonderful time to be there. The weather's beautiful. All right, guys, thank you so much. And hopefully you guys will enjoy this great podcast with Felix and Dallas from Digital Giant. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel. Right.
Okay. You've listened to these podcasts.
I have, yes.
You haven't listened to
a little bit. A little bit?
Oh, you have. Good. Okay. So you know that I've already started, just so you guys know.
Perfect.
But this was awesome that you guys are able to come here. I really appreciate you doing that and being able to hang out at lunch and sort of give us a little preview into the worlds that you are involved in. But it's very, very different. I think that's one thing I want people to realize specifically is that yes, there are people that do CG cars, and there's people that do commercials, and there's all that world out there, and there's a world of CG content creation and visual effects and commercials and all that stuff. But the way that you guys are doing it is very, very different than I've heard before, right? That's the way I'm seeing it. Mm. And so I'd like to know, first of all, if you can start, Dallas, with telling me a little bit about the history of Digital Giant and how that began and how did it end up forming into the way that you are doing it now?
I think it's funny that you say that it's different, because from my side, I understand what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just been a natural response to the environment that I've found myself in.
Okay.
And I guess so. As a way of background, I came as I was a composite artist for stills photography, originally attached to a really big car photographer right as digital was breaking. So I was on some of the last jobs where they were still shooting film, and some of the first ones when they were using digital backs. And that enabled you to do composite work in real time for the first time. The mm-hmm. fact that you were shooting to a digital back, that was what unlocked. And mm-hmm. so that changed the creative process, because you no longer were looking at Polaroids. You were actually able to see a digital file, and then you could be reactive to that, and you could start to not only expand creatively upon what was possible, mm-hmm. but you could find more efficient ways of doing things. It kind of was both of those things at once. So it was more there were more possibilities, and you could actually do them for lower price points in a lot of ways. And,
right.
CGI started making its way into that commercial space at that, I want to say, lower level, but stills definitely wasn't broadcast commercial, so didn't have the same amounts of budgets attached to it where you could have full VFX and things like that. So mm-hmm. I think, if anything, Digital Giant's been born out of constraints, and that still is the case. We try and set up these paradigms where there are a lot of constraints to what we're doing, and I really feel that that's the center of innovation. It really, I equate it to, like, I love pinball. And when all the machines, though, I'll go to a place when all the machines are on free play, uh-huh. I find it boring. You know, it's like, but you think back to when you were younger and you only had a buck to spend at the arcade.
Right.
I got really good at pinball because of that constraint. It forced you to, like, be really economical with your decisions and to really focus. And,
right.
and everything is precious at that point. And it's similar things. So you fast forward and you look at how my experience with CGI and VFX was one where you were able to unlock the impossible. So, and that's always a component. We were able to do now car things or whatever it was in this, in a way that was not possible to do in reality or cost prohibitive, let's say. Mm-hmm. And that was one main component of it. But where I sort of landed coming from where I did, which was more this car product perspective, I saw that you had a product that was design driven, and the engineering and design of it was all digital. And so it sort of unlocked this whole pipeline whereby that same data set that's being used to design the product is then being used to create the assets of the product. And because it was cars and there's a lot of costs associated with them, it probably led that market in terms of being one of the first sectors where you had that being CGI sort of took over that car production.
Well, I would say that's the case for a lot of design aspects, right? Architecture, like, you know, when they started modeling in CG, then they're like, well, might as well just render that thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know? So that, I mean, I think that's when it's the case with anything that's digitally created. I think it's a good analogy. But cars are definitely up there as well. I mean, gosh, years and years ago at SpeedShape, that was their whole thing. It's like, we got all the data.
Yeah.
We're going to give you the data, and we're going to be able to do all the CG from, you know, from that data set. But let's go back to that idea. The data that's coming out of you know, the design department is not necessarily very conducive to a good CG world, because it's all NURBS-based, right? And it was very frustrating and hard to translate that data.
Yeah, and I think where we've landed now, one of our biggest innovations that we have is that we're able to push at least the full garaged model that we get that has the full detail and data in it. Mm-hmm. We're able to push that through real-time platforms, which that's been a game changer too, because a lot of...
Well, obviously hardware has changed a lot in that time.
Huge, right? yeah. But no, that's definitely true. It's like having access to good data and being able to produce accurate assets, all just come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the place we found ourselves was needing to look at, and this Digital Giant was born, looking at the world around us and seeing where the opportunities were, mm-hmm. I really centered around this idea that cars are amazing because they redesign them every single year, and they're huge things. They're hard to photograph and film. They're hard to ship around, and they're hard to actually get assets of them that are ready for market at the same time when that actual car is ready for market, because right. they launch them earlier and earlier. So found that it was the perfect place for us to use that as the center that becomes our center for what we're innovating around.
Right.
And so Digital Giant is really a technology company, and we use automotive production as our sort of sandbox that enables us to create these new and novel ways of creating assets and content. Content's really the word.
Right.
Across all platforms.
So you guys aren't making necessarily car commercials, but you make content out of the product that can be used for anything people want.
And so Felix, yeah. coming from VFX and obviously more of that car commercial background, and myself as well,
right.
We definitely do those things. But we've just really felt that the future lies in the digital space, which is the opportunities that are upcoming are more about platform and less about the sexier one-off commercials, because they've become few and far between. And
right.
there's so many, especially in LA. It's a pretty competitive market for that business that's been really contracting. So positioning ourselves to be the recipients of the next world, which is more of this online media, as opposed to, say, TVCs, that's where we sort of focus.
Right. Now, you mentioned, obviously, Felix, is one of the first, I'm assuming you were one of the first guys that started in the LA office, right?
Yep. My name was just Dallas and myself.
Right.
In an empty space.
Nice. Yeah. I love that feeling. This was what this place was. It was just concrete and lawn yep. and like, and we, actually now we have nicer furniture, but when we started, it was like, all right, let's go CB2. Let's get some deliveries. And it was cool to just sort of be part of that startup mentality in a way, But you started you had an office before this. Obviously, your company's older than when you started here in LA, right?
Yeah, we operated as primary, really a virtual company. So I went around just the same as the 6 degrees
right.
of yourself. I went around collecting friends, really, who were these like-minded individuals who were sort of at the top of their game, and most of them working in places like the mill and other big shops, but mm-hmm. who had a specific experience. And especially out of London, where primarily everybody had more, the freelance model wasn't as robust as it has been here. That's changed over mm-hmm. time, but sort of liberating them from these larger companies and kind of helping people to set up on their own. And we've created some really small outposts, I guess you would call them, in other parts of the world, where we're just interacting with these artists every single day. There are collaborators in this
right.
work, but and we did that kind of parallel with what was possible. So 5 years ago, it was possible to do some high-resolution stills imagery and some full CG animation and stuff like that, and you could push that across continents without too much issue, mm-hmm. as it was possible to then start pushing live action and full VFX stuff. We kept pace with what the internet would allow mm-hmm. to a certain degree. And then when we built LA, it was very much live action centric, but that work's able to be distributed all over the yeah. world without issue now.
Right.
So it's... Yeah.
But you came to start the office, you had done some experience, right? You had worked in, obviously, done. I've done car commercials
yep.
with you, I feel like.
Yeah, we've done them together.
We've done them together. So you and I know each other, that world yeah. very well of, how it works and all its constraints. So it's kind of nice. I mean, obviously, it's nice when you have someone that already just knows the car language, because it is a language that's very specialized. Very
yes.
specialized, and I am well aware of that. But when you did this, obviously you had done something interesting at the mill that obviously sort of sparked some of this idea with the Blackbird project, right?
Yeah, I was involved with the Blackbird projects.
Uh-huh.
There are a few of them, so I got to know kind of the execution side of it. Was on the production side of it as well, and looked at a lot of things, and it's like, okay, well, this works really great. This stuff, just like anything that you do, you always look at how to improve, how to adjust, how to make things a little bit easier, from an artist perspective, from a technical perspective, and just an execution. It's like, how long does it take us to get from point A to point B mm-hmm. using this way or that way? And so I took a lot of that. And when me and Dallas connected, and we talked about his ideas and this new piece of tech, it was more like, oh, there's a lot of really good things here that yeah. I really like that I thought I was like, I mean, you and I just had a conversation. It's like, if things were, I mean, how many times have we like, if we can just do this type of project this way, how much easier would it be?
I know.
That same feeling is when I got, when I first had that first initial discussion with Dallas.
Right.
It was instantly, I was like, oh my God, right. This is what I've been waiting for. This is like, exactly. And then it's taking that and it's like, okay, this worked this way. Now I can work this way because now you have this piece of technology.
Right.
Makes it easier, makes it faster. That very first project when really took off, I mean, I was even just blown away at the process myself because there's okay. so many times where you look back and you're just like, I wish this was easier.
Right.
Why can't it get easier? And now I have this in our hands that Daz just did a prototype on and it was just like, wow. Love this. This is exactly how you want to do these types of projects.
Right.
Because like what Dallas was saying, everything does become very, it's a car. Mm-hmm. Car changes, car needs updates. You don't want to reinvent the wheel all the time. You want to do it in a way where it's literally efficient.
Yeah.
And easier, right? Yeah, it's yeah. like so but yeah, that's
and the more you do it, if you do it really well, then they're just going to keep using you to do it, right? So it becomes a
you embed yourself yeah. as well, because once you've created that asset once mm-hmm. and then if you're just doing iterations on top of it, which is normally the case too, that's right. kind of the beauty of that automotive sector is that right. most of these things will revisit those same projects year over year for 2 to 3 years, so yep. It does, and then once you've done a certain amount of the cars within any given group, you tend to get a certain amount of ubiquity, and it just you become the center of that whole little world. And but it's all like Felix was saying, it's all about having procedural solutions. There's always going to be the aberrant shots. You're going to need to do some crafty work, but as much as we can make procedural and pipelineable, yeah.
But even those, I mean, we had a couple of those, and even that was like,
it's a lot more straightforward. I mean,
it was like, yeah.
There is just so people understand. I mean, I know a little bit of the car world, but there is enormous amount of content that goes into every car, right? So if you let's say your company, car company Honda, or whatever, let's just use them as an example, right? And you have the 2020 Accord that's coming out, or whatever, right? And you're going to work on that 2020 Accord. You have to create tons and tons of content for it. Not just here's a commercial yep. of this car. You have to create different colors of this car. You have to showcase what it looks like in different environments. And you do that through certain things with photo shoots or with what's called running footage, right? And there are, and you came from the world of running footage, right? Explain what running footage is.
I mean, the manufacturers ask the dealers as part of their dealership contracts. The mm-hmm. dealers pay into a pool of money that supplies them with a certain amount of assets annually. And that traditionally was car books. You had the brochures that were in the office. It'd be a certain amount of digital assets, point of sale assets, mm-hmm. and then also an entire library of running footage for mm-hmm. every single car model for every single year. Mm-hmm. And that sits on a central repository nationally. And if you're a dealer in Florida, you can take that stuff and you can cut your own local car commercial with it.
Which they do. They just take the running footage, they put a slap of price on it, yep. you know, Labor Day sale.
Yeah, they tend to grade it really poorly and then put it out. And that's something that they're on the hook for providing every single year, year in, year out. And they need that content. And what's happened, because the entire sort of production model has shifted, partially because of the capabilities of CGI and VFX. Mm-hmm. They used to produce all these prototypes of all these vehicles that would hit the actual, would be in North America in time to do these shoots historically.
Right.
But because they don't need them as much anymore, it's become less of a focus, they won't have all those cars. So where we find ourselves is being able to shoot last year's car and render this year's car on top of it. And right. that becomes really useful. And I think, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to add to that based on experience of just having these conversations with production directors, nine out of 10 times they will prefer to shoot a vehicle. That's what they're used to. That's what their whole careers have been, is having something physically there, framing it exactly how they want. And that's fine. And it's been made it easy. I mean, the last several projects we've done, like Dallas was getting into, we used an old previous year, swapped out some rims. Didn't stop the director, didn't stop production. They shot it how they needed to.
And just swapped the metal out.
Yeah. Exactly. That was, I mean, when I first saw the first PR stuff for the Blackbird, the first thing that really twigged with me was the fact that I know the camera operators, you know, the arm car operators and the DPs, and they've been doing this stuff a long time, and they are artists. And but they know how to make a thing that they're shooting look great. You take all of the lines out of it. You take all the dimensionality out of the actual subject that you're capturing, and then you're just capturing sort of this random blob. How do you know that you're lensing it right? How do you know that you're framing it right? How do you know that that shot's going to be sexy? And when you look at, when you go do a day shooting, not you didn't just shoot your edit. You shot a bunch of takes. That it's the X. It's those special moments that get cut into the best of the best of what that was. And most of those, you didn't even know it when you did it, right? So, but the odds of that happening are there because there's people intuitively interacting with a thing that they can visually see, and they're professionals and artists, and that's what they do. And so that's what creates actual good content. And so when I saw the Blackbird, I was like, how does that work? You're removing a huge component there that is actually what I feel is the biggest
value. Just so people know, and the Blackbird project was, you know, they had like a, it was like a go-kart almost, right?
Yep.
With a professional driver in it, but they had no sheet metal or anything. It was just a bunch of tube frames right around this guy. And then with tracking markers, and then they would put the CG car on top. So the CG car was rendered in real time using Unreal. But like you said, the DP can't see the car.
It's a different approach. I mean, at the end of the day, the DP wants to see what he's shooting, as well as the director, and as well as the agency, as well as everybody that's part of that production.
Especially if you're a car person. You're like, imagine a car here? No, that doesn't work.
And it's really hard. And for us, for digital replacement, the solution that we're bringing to the table is that you don't have to change that. We have a piece of technology that makes it easy. And even from an artist standpoint, when I want to add to what Dallas was saying, even from an artist standpoint, you've done plenty of CG car replacement, right? I've done plenty. Every discussion is always the same. Oh, it'd be so good if we had some like real reference of the car in that frame to match those reflections, to be exactly how the DP shot it,
right?
To be exactly what, how the light hits. My experience in the last few that we've done here at DG, I'm just like, it's right there. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like you get to get that right ping exactly as it was shot. You get to get that right reflection right as it was shot. Nothing that the DP or the director shot changes. It's just a new version. It's a new facelift of just that vehicle.
Because you see the old car underneath it.
Exactly.
Right.
I think, I mean, that said, the Blackbird definitely has a big use and a place. And I think especially for cars that don't exist yet, for things, cars that are embargoed, that are totally new redesigns and you can't get them out there, I think there's definitely a place for that stuff.
Or if you want to just do lots of different cars.
Iterating on top of stuff like that. But what we were looking at more specifically was these running footage packages, which have a long legacy, and they have teams of people that's pretty much how they spend their year. That's what they do. They do running footage packages. So we're part of that world, and everything that we've sort of engineered has been made to work within that world, not against it. So our solutions don't even interrupt the day's shooting. We're able to get everything that we need from a VFX perspective without even needing our own time in the road or anything. We're able to be completely seamless with the production. So we don't slow that end of it down
bit. What's your toolkit for doing that?
Well, that's a secret. Okay. essentially, we've created a way of capturing all of the lighting information for a given scene very quickly and efficiently. As fast as you could drive a car down a road, essentially.
Right.
But it enables us to use what's actually captured And from that single capture, we can generate a light rig, essentially, mm-hmm. that will yield even your first test render. Once you've tracked your new car in there and you plug it all together and hit render, it was about half the time we'd look at the test render and mm-hmm. go, all right, it's done. And that was, I think, as soon as Felix saw it all come together and we were like, okay, this has legs.
Right.
It's based on the fact that, you know what, like, if you're able to just take that reality where the thing was actually captured and then capture that in such a way so you can be essentially using it one-to-one. It doesn't have to match exactly, but the mm-hmm. fact that it's close and it's reacting in all the same ways, mm-hmm. it fools you immediately because everything's moving. So, and I think the basis of it from my perspective is always the same, is like, I want to start from a center, and let's agree that reality is that center. So if you put that on first and foremost, and we say, okay, let's look at what it just looks like right out. So let's plug this together, hit render, and you look at it, and you go, okay, that's pretty close. We can now improve upon it by doing this, maybe adding a little card or a little fill or something. Mm-hmm. That's a really short way to go because everything underneath it really tracks and is real and is reacting like the environment around you. So to Felix's point, even when we had difficult shots, the fact that you're already starting from a place that's 80% there mm-hmm. and you're just adding on top actually is what saves you. Because as we know in VFX, you can create any look you want and you can do it 100 different ways. And you can do it as real to the real world as you wanted to. You could build all your lights so it just mimics a real physical studio, or you could do it in a way that's totally kind of cheating. And you could get both good results, but how that stuff plays forward and how it can fall apart potentially and get really expensive to produce, I think when you're basing it on the real, it actually ends up being a shorter route.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that was it for me too. It was the work that it takes to get what you need to capture on set, which was a lot of planning, whether they were going to give you the time or not.
You're talking historically.
Historically, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Just in my personal experiences, when you go on set and just even with a single HDR capture. Thank you. Just with a single HDR capture, it's like if you're shooting over a mile length, mm-hmm. it's like you have to go from here to there in that route from that mile. And it takes a long time and it takes away from production. And then you got to do all the post work on that and the stitching and putting that together and building these light rigs that's just going to get all those reflections.
It sounds very painful.
You're shaking your head. And it's the same pains that I went through. Yeah. And that even just what I said is completely eliminated.
Yeah.
Completely 100% eliminated, even going from the light rigs. I don't even shoot gray chrome balls anymore because this system allows me to just grade, essentially. You're just matching a plate
right.
because you're taking that same data, the same type of information into the vehicle. It's one-to-one.
Right.
And at that point, there is no real calibrating. You're just rotating where your sun is at and you're done. And it's like, you know, everybody that's experienced the CG car replacement projects goes through the same similar pains.
Right.
Everybody's trying to find the faster solution or the more efficient solution, and it is hard. And I you know, like I said, I think we have something that really has some legs just from a on-set experience and a post experience. It's the best I've ever encountered.
Right.
And the we also come from the production background. So the idea that you can seamlessly and essentially for free, mm-hmm. once you're out on a shoot, we can capture that road. We only need to capture it once, but we capture the whole length of it. So even if you don't use this shot this year, but you had one that you want to maybe use next year that's from further down the road, we've got that. And we can bring this out on all these productions where maybe they don't even know if they're going to do a replacement yet. Mm-hmm. But since we're on the production and we have it and we're not interfering with them in any way, it's a really, really small cost to just tack in there that opens it up so that you have that flexibility the next year, the year after, to always go back and revisit that stuff. And that's part of why that solve was important, because we give our own shoots that we do, we bring it on all of it. And so we're always capturing this for everything that we're doing. So in the event that they want to do an update next year, it's in the mix, and it's sort of, you know what it's going to cost and how long it's going to take. And yeah. And I, again, it's constraints though. And it was like, how could I do this without even asking permission? Right. How could I bring this out on a shoot and actually capture this content without needing to ask anyone's permission, meaning it's not going to take away from the job we've actually been hired to do, but it's going to get us the stuff we need to actually do our clients a favor next year.
Right.
But and everything that we do really is like that. It's always trying to look at what's possible, what's available, resources we have, and then spin that into the job of tomorrow.
I remember when we were going through this with one of our first clients, and when I was like, so you don't take no time at all? We're like, no, we, as soon as they finish, we'll take it down once exactly from point A to point. They're like, well, besides that, you don't need anything else. And we're just like, no. And they were still like, wait, because our experience, it's like the pre-planning, right? It's like you talk to the VFX soup. It's like, we got to do this. We got to make time for this. I need time to go shoot this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And we didn't ask for any of that.
You just like, we're capturing it all at once.
All at once.
And then you're done.
And we're done.
So that you're basically, your time on set is 1 15-minute drive down the road.
If it takes that long. Yeah, because we're going 30 miles an hour. So,
yeah. Yeah, we did a mountain from the top to the bottom. I mean, that was like 5 minutes.
Yeah. In the snow as well. We do full deep snow. We it can go over any sort of, we can work in any terrain. So
that's the thing I also loved about running footage is like, man, shooting running footage, you get to go to the prettiest places in the world.
It's one of those things that you think would go away in a lot of ways because it seems like an antiquated model to a certain degree and how it's sort of utilized.
I'll get to that. But.
Yeah, but I think, well, I'll let you get to it.
Well, it's interesting because I mean, obviously there's a lot, you know, cars still, there's still a ton of commercials, right? The model right now is dealerships still need to sell cars and they still need a package. It's basically almost like stock footage of their exact product, right? So so they need that data to create their commercials and, you know, put their VO, come down to Crazy Eddie sale. and so I know what, you know, that's about. But it's interesting that that's the case because I remember they're starting, sometimes they try to do different things. There's new marketing ways to approach. There's no, we're not, it's not just TV commercials anymore, right?
Right.
It's, you know, it's obviously there's a lot of stuff on the internet that's happening, a lot of different ways to advertise on the internet. So what are some of the trends that you're seeing that are happening in terms of the car marketing world? And how's that changing right now?
Instagram?
Yeah. So
I mean, yeah, Instagram.
We were just a part of a pretty interesting project with Genesis and the G70. And the G70 this year won all the big car awards at the shows. And we were involved in making all this content for that G70. And they did a pretty neat thing where we created a full 3D
animated
city street to start, where that was a fully modeled place that was this street in Seattle that they'd chosen. So they had this specific place that they wanted to put this car in front of these hotels, and so we modeled that completely. That got used to create a full WebGL car configurator experience that leads the Genesis website. So that's a digital asset that is a full car configurator that's done in WebGL. So you had to create a lower polygon model of that car, and you can open the doors and turn the lights on and off, and you can build and price it and do all this stuff.
Just so people know, because I know car stuff, but some we realize that like this is a language that we know that some people do not know. So a car configurator is, so for those of you who are architects listening or visual effects people are, it's basically when you go to a website and you say, I want to buy a Genesis, you say, I want it in this color, I want this wheel, I want this, I want that, and the car builds itself under all of those different ways of doing things. And one of the ways it used to be done was literally thousands and thousands and thousands of renders, and it would actually just give you, it will just do a render of the car. It will show you the appropriate render of the car. But now you're doing it all in real time, right?
Yeah, so the WebGL allows you to have a full, fully reactive and dynamic experience where you can use your mouse and or your finger if you're on mobile, and you can rotate around the car, you can zoom in, you can touch the door and the door opens, you can go into the interior, and you can change that product by selecting different trims and options, and then it changes right before your eyes. And the WebGL, because it's all run client-side in your web browser, essentially, it requires a very that you really create very low resolution assets. So the quality of that is always going to be quite a bit lower than anything we would create in traditional CG and VFX. But the fact that it's dynamic and has all this, you know, it's fun to interact with, that really, I think, outweighs the fact that it doesn't look quite as good in a lot of ways. So we worked on creating that entire experience along with Media Monks was the company that we worked with in doing that, and the agency. And that became the center of their, when they launched this vehicle, the G70. And they also had that as a touchscreen experience at the auto show. Now, simultaneous to that, we took that same environment and we brought it into Maya, and then we rendered all these different permutations of the car actually driving down that city road with the full dynamic cameras, so to look like more like proper running footage or a commercial piece, and cars driving down the road. And we rendered it in all the different colors. And then we also did some different interior shots. And what they did, they created an Instagram stories campaign. So they if you Instagram stories is where you have in portrait mode, it sort of plays a video essentially. So they kind of hacked Instagram stories where you tap to load that Genesis Instagram story and it would show you that video, the car driving down the road, and it would then give you these options. Do you want to see it in red, blue, black, whatever?
Other colors, yeah.
And you would click on that and it would direct you to a new account essentially that would then show you that specific option that you wanted. And then you could keep clicking through until you'd built your complete Genesis and all the different options just in Instagram.
Interesting.
And then you would take your last page, it would say click in bio basically, or, you know, in for the link. And when you would click on that, that would be a specific link that would then take you to the Genesis webpage, to that car configurator, and it would have the car you just built on Instagram. That's what's loaded up on that configurator online.
That's pretty smart.
And it had all the prices and everything, and here, get in touch with your dealer.
So you basically built it on Instagram, and then it took you to the page.
Yeah, and it
preloaded all the content that it already knew.
Yep, that you did via that other platform. So that's I think, creative use of connecting social media to online media, straight through to connecting you with a dealer for a very specific product that you configured yourself.
Interesting.
And they got a lot of accolades for doing that. From our side, we're always, you know, we make the content, but we're also making the platforms and the technologies that are making this content possible. And so it's really like the sky's the limit, but it's a slow moving train, you know, and it's definitely a train. It's on tracks. It's not, we're going along a trajectory that's fairly, you know, linear, because, you know, it's a big business. So you could have the most amazing tech that could do the most amazing things, but if nobody can use it, if there's no market for it, if there's no output for it,
right,
it's just a cool thing that we can geek out on with each other, basically.
Sure.
And, you know, the amount of stuff that ends up in that category, I'm sure, is tremendous. But this was actually a fairly, it was a cool use of some new technology that I think did really well, actually. People liked that, both the ability to connect these two things together and then also to have a dynamic experience where it's beyond just kind of choose your own adventure, and it all kind of connects together.
I think that's it. It's they're looking for experience. Like, I think that's kind of where we are, right? It's like, what is the experience? Yeah. What can you do with that piece of technology? What's the wow factor too? And I think for them with this whole Instagram thing, it was like, we were like, Instagram, the story, what? How's that going to work? Then when you saw it together and understood it, you're like, that's really
exactly
cool.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And then people really enjoyed it. I mean, I was in there. I was like, I made my own card myself. And I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Right.
And when you see it, you're just like, oh, that is brilliant. And I think, you know, part of that goes to what we're trying to build as well. It's just.
I love people when they're using stuff not how they're it's intended to be used. Yeah. And so as soon as I saw this deck come across, I was like, oh, I like this. And it was mainly for that reason. And you find that like so many things started out as one thing, but they end up finding an actual greater purpose or home as something else completely. But it's due to people using stuff not as, you know, not as directed to a certain degree. And I feel the same way about all the, you know, different technologies we use for doing the work that we do in the VFX space. It's born out of people, you know, taking a tool and then figuring out a new innovative way to use it that nobody had thought of before. And
make things more efficient.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing for me is efficiency. And we say that word a lot is trying to make things efficient.
Well, you have to, right? Yeah. Because there's so much content. If it wasn't efficient, you would just be dead in the water.
Yeah.
Do you remember this was years ago where there was a company that basically wanted us to create, I think it was almost 100 hours of digital running footage. Do you remember this?
No, I do not remember that.
And it was some insane number. I probably would have. And I said, this will take us 5 years to render. You know, it was ridiculous. Yeah. And it was, and they were like, they wanted to create the entire library of a very major Japanese car company. I'll just put it that way. Their entire garage, all digital, every color, everything. Every single car of that year, you know, spinning like digital running footage or digital turntables or whatever it was. And I was like, this is so nowadays, obviously that's changed, right? So you have to be efficient. You have to think about different ways of doing things. You guys are thinking about obviously capturing the lighting and everything information immediately. So you get everything ready to go because otherwise it's
just get into that final step sooner.
Yeah.
I think it's too, it's like, you've got, you look at the different options. So you can go shoot a thing. You could go create a complete CG asset. You could do a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. And then just looking at it from what is the most efficient way to accomplish, let's just say, a photorealistic plate. Well, it's to shoot it, especially, you know, with the cost of camp. You know, we have all the most high-end professional equipment these days is at your fingertips. Even for the hobbyist, it's at your fingertips. Yeah. So that's a big thing that unlocked. Well, that just brought down the cost of live-action production significantly, right? So you sort of track along those lines. Well, but if you're a company in Germany and you do car business in North America primarily, but you're not connected to production, you're not going to be pushing solutions that are off. Like, why don't we go shoot that? You would never say that. You're always going to be like, no, we're doing full 3D. So our angle was always like, let's take what we're here. We're in LA. We've got the sunshine. We've got the locations. We're attached to the production. So that's our leg up in this mix. And also we believe it's the better way. In terms of you want the trees moving and the leaves.
We suggested,
and beauty.
I mean, how many times have we gotten in crazy about doing things in full CG? I mean, guys, look at you like, shoot it.
Yeah.
And then we'll add some CG stuff to it.
Like, sure.
You know, it's always going to be more efficient. It's going to look better at the end. And the process is, it's less time as well.
Right.
You know?
And so we did this short. A stupid short called V-Ray IRL. I don't know if you've ever seen that thing we did.
But the robot?
No, V-Ray IRL. Oh. I'll show it to you later. It's a really stupid short. Oh. It was really funny. But it was a bunch of CG guys.
Yeah.
But we got actually a real DP to be on it. And he was actually the AC on Californication and stuff.
Nice.
But we were in. We had a car shot. It's, you know, dialogue shot inside the car. We're all CG guys, right? So he's assuming we're just going to put green screen out there. We're going to make a – and then like, nah, we don't have time for that stuff. So we just put big white sheets and blast them with light so it just looks overexposed. And that's it. He's like, I don't want to track. I don't want to comp. We'll just move the camera around like it's moving and we're all set. You know? And he's like, but you guys are CG guys. This should be easy for you. It's like, no, we know how much work it is. So we don't want to do it.
We know how much work it is. Exactly. That's how I saw CG car replacement. I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
That takes too much time. That costs so much.
Yeah.
This is a much simpler way.
Yeah. Shoot it. Shoot it. It's actually, if you can shoot it, do it.
Exactly.
Well, especially if you're already going out to shoot it. That's kind of the thing.
Don't shoot it twice.
That's kind of it. And what you find too, you look at any one of these brands, you're like, oh, they shot in Montana. again this year on the same road over that same bridge. And they did that same drone shot and they did this same shot.
How many cars have I seen go through the Second Street Tunnel?
Right?
Yeah. There's a tunnel downtown LA. It's on Second Street.
Yeah.
And it's very iconic. And if you go see that tunnel and you'll say, oh, I've seen so many cars drive through that tunnel in a commercial. That's so many. Yep.
It's what the funny part is, actually. L.A. is used to be the place. And so I live in downtown L.A. because I moved there because I spent so much of my life shooting down there. It just was easier to not have to wake up and drive there. I just was already there.
Right.
But the business is going away from L.A. in a big way. Yeah.
Where is it going?
Everywhere else but here. to be honest,
because of what's the driving force behind the move?
Downtown LA was always really production friendly. The main reason was
all
the vacant lots, and it was empty. So you had staging. Staging's the biggest part of live action production, and we had all these vacant lots in downtown LA, and they're all high rise buildings that are going up now. So the amount of available staging areas has dropped probably 90%, and then there didn't used to be anybody there, and now everybody lives there. So it's really changed.
It's interesting.
I mean,
10 years ago, downtown or deep. You know, maybe a little longer than that. Downtown LA was empty.
Yeah, empty. Yeah.
There was nothing.
No.
Nothing going on.
And that's really shifted the business quite a bit. And then LA hasn't been the best about promoting production in town. Just they've been going after production companies for a lot of things from, you know, sort of business and tax perspective that hasn't necessarily been that friendly. And that's also been pushing it a little bit. And then you have other states that are offering really big tax incentives. So now our clients are mandating that we bid stuff in LA, but then also in New Mexico, in a state that offers tax breaks.
I didn't know that goes all the way up to running footage and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
So suddenly you find yourself in Georgia and Mexico.
Yeah, everybody's got outposts in Texas now, and Toyota moved out
to
Dallas.
Texas is 25% in Texas. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's changing, but still. I don't think there's any area where LA in 3 hours you can be in every possible landscape, and that's why
that's one thing that's amazing.
That's why there will always be a certain amount of production because it's you got the sun, you know.
Right. You want to go to the beach? Done. I mean, there's snow on the mountains right there right now.
So it's
only about an hour and a half, 2 hours away, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then you got the beach right there. You can just go to the beach. That's, you know, 20 minutes that way. And then you can get sort of desert, and there you go.
Desert. You got sand dunes. You got mountains.
Everything. It's all here.
All in a day. Yeah.
In a day. You can see all of that. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting – it's one thing that's always surprised me about Los Angeles is – even just California has got such a diverse thing. When I go see the giant trees, the sequoias, that's very iconic, you know. So, yeah, interesting. So what are some of the other trends you're seeing now that's becoming new things that are going on in the car area? You mentioned the Instagram thing, obviously, but now much more real-time stuff happening on the web, right?
Real-time. I mean, I think that's – everybody's jumping onto that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, the real time platform is big. I think it's going to be something that, I mean, everybody's dipping into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's whoever gets there first that makes the biggest change.
Okay.
And sets the trend of like, this is how we do it now.
Right.
Everything becomes AR. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's the big one. What else?
Yeah. I mean, we have a big focus in real time for the last.
Yeah.
4 years we've been looking at gaming engines and developing around Unity and gaming engines and seeing how just that same paradigm we talked about a little bit ago where a dynamic experience will transcend the actual physical quality of the asset. So the fact that you can interact with it, the fact that you can explore it, the fact that it's fun. Gamification. I mean, that's really it. We as humans, we love games. We love being able to play with something. We love being able to try and break it. You know, that's the first thing we try and do. We're like, how can I drive? You know, I can drive the car. Okay, what can I crash it into? That's the second thing you do. You're like, after you figure out you can drive it. And I really believe in that. It's what the first time I put on a VR headset. it wasn't necessarily the experience I had with it on. It was more when I took it off and then looked at the room I was actually sitting in, and you're like, whoa, I'm back here. That's what sort of really flipped my head around, to realize that, okay, this is an immersive enough experience for me to be transported in a way that emotionally I've detached with my own actual reality, and I've engaged with another one. If you're able to do that on an emotional level, you can see how, with the compelling enough content, if I can be in that other space, it's got legs. Be honest, it's not just a gimmick. It's actually able to do something quite special. And it really turned my head around into starting to not look at it as a gimmick and start trying to develop content that could be in that space. And I believe that if we're talking about commerce and selling things, selling cars, whatever it is, that's kind of, you know, the center of a lot of the business parts of it. That's a really important aspect. And that's why it will become important, because, like, if I'm able to have that type of an experience, I'm able to actually make more what I feel are informed decisions about a given thing. And I will actually take action upon those decisions that I've made. And I think real time is the center of all that. Game engines are the center of all that. So like anything, you can have the most future tense idea, even concept that you've realized and you have a working model of it. If there's no world to support it or use it, it has nowhere to go. So we've had to develop platforms that are able to basically service yesterday whilst also giving you a ticket to tomorrow. And that's been the angle, and been what we found is kind of essential, because I need to be able to make something that you can use to do business as usual, but we're building an asset that actually is already equipped for the future. Yeah. And the gaming engine has been the center of that.
I mean, and just hearing, like, for example, Genesis at the auto show, and just hearing of, like, the experience model, and just hearing them out and what they want to see, and you're just like, okay, well, yeah, we can easily give you that, because we do have these platforms that can easily accommodate that, because all the assets like that, so everything's driven through this one asset. And you're just adding on top of it. So with that same platform, we can run the configurator, that same asset, we can do full CG Instagram stories. With that, we can also use CG car replacements for down in Montana, or wherever it may be. And then the user experience for, like, an auto show. You know, you show up at an auto show, it's like, what can we do to just bring in people, just like the wow factor? Well, with our platform, and that's what we're looking into, is like, what can we add to this to give the user that experience while also using that same platform to
create all the digital assets and all the legacy sort of things that people need. Essentially, you know, that's what can pay for it, if you will. It's like, it's able to service on all these assets that are part of the standard deliverable packages that we do. And then how else can you utilize this? And what I feel is important is, like, you need to equip people with a thing and say, go play with this, have this, and play around with that. Try and break it. See how you're going to use it. Use it, not how I told you to use it. Come up with a new use for this thing.
Well, sure.
And that will be the implementation that takes us to tomorrow. So the bigger question is, what does that look like? Do I think it's .coms, or, I mean, I really don't. I think there's the next sort of iteration of online media that's a much more personal experience that is 100% driven by everything that the internet knows about you, as well as, like, which, you know, is scary and useful simultaneously. I can't tell you how many things I've bought off of my Instagram feed that were, you know, fed to me as, like, it's an ad, but you're like, I need that thing. How did they know? I saw this thing.
So it was so funny, because my friend Daniel Buck hates ads so much. Ironically, he made ads, but we were sitting in a room, and we were talking to one of our TDs, and he was telling us about some new thing he was doing, and he was going, he's like, all right, well, let's go to the web, I'll show you what I mean. And he opens up his browser, his Google or whatever, and he does a search, and then on the sidebar There's an ad for the yellow Adidas shoes from Enter the Dragon, right? And he stops everything he's doing. He's like, oh, I totally want that. It's like, they know you they want know. That. They know you want that. So he clicked on it, bought him, stopped the meeting so he could buy those yellow shoes. It took him, it only took him like 15, 20 seconds to do the whole process.
But so, and I'm, we're aware. Okay.
So this, you're basically, they can learn from you, right?
I see, even though you're aware of what's going on and we're in the business of manipulating the system and creating these assets and understanding it. Mm-hmm. So therefore we're in some ways maybe a little bit less, it's not naive's the wrong word, but like we're actually paying attention to it, like on a deeper level, because it's our business. And I still click on the stuff and buy it because they're like, oh, it's the shoes. It's exactly what I
bought. I don't have a problem.
Instagram save.
I'd rather get ads that are relevant to me.
Well, you look at that and you go, okay, well, that's got legs, okay? And against all my intuition, I'm like, oh, this is actually quite useful. So you play that tape a little bit more forward where you start to think about how, let's say, a social media platform like Instagram now has Instagram TV. And so what's that content going to be like? So our next move, really, what we're working on is developing our own channels, because you have to. So we need our own outlets, essentially, that are places where we not only are participating and creating content for our clients, but we need to actually have a home for where that goes that speaks to specific markets and demographics, because people don't follow brands. People don't follow Genesis, really, unless you already own a Genesis, and then you're not really their target. They're not convinced yet, right? So we create all this content that essentially is going to go on, say, Genesis's Instagram. Nobody follows that. People follow aggregators. People follow other channels that speak to their interests. Let's just say, like, I mean, technology is a blanket, could be one. And that relates to cars. Most of what they're using to sell cars these days is all technology. And there's amazing tech in cars. Autonomous driving, the Teslas are just mind-bogglingly amazing in terms of tech, right? But that's kind of all the brands are getting there. Yeah. And
they're moving into that same direction.
So you think about that. Okay, well, we have a channel that's technology, and it's aimed at this sort of more mechanically-minded people who are into cars. They're into technology. They're into, you know, whatever that is. So we're looking at how we develop those types of channels. And then we're curating that content, putting some of our own content we're making for our clients up there. It has a certain viewership. Mm-hmm. And then that translates into specific insights that we can provide to them of how their ads bought did. But that's the future of that whole that sector of marketing that used to be kind of TV or even digital or online. Now it's transitioning into that. But I don't think that's the end of it either. I think that still is really short-sighted. I think there's the next sort of level, which you start applying, I hate to use the term, but machine learning, let's call it, or AI, that's using your data along with being able to view everything else in existence. And then it is curating and tailoring things specifically for you so that it's very useful. Yeah.
They content. Know that I like fishing in Montana. They know that my Instagram does because Instagram it's part of what I do on Instagram. Yeah. And they know that my favorite color is red because I tend to click on more red things, right?
Yeah.
And so therefore, you show me a video or real-time thing of, you know, a red Hyundai driving in Montana to go fly fishing.
And that's it. And so that is the most obvious use of it, if you will. And that's only pertaining to a specific marketing asset that we're talking about. I think it goes beyond that to, like, just like the video game market, for example. They're making movies. They're amazing movies that they're making that are these games. And it's an interactive film that you're playing inside of. And inside of there are loads of products and everything else and content. Content moving forward will have a similar paradigm. It's like I went to the Sundance Film Festival for the second time this year. And I see a lot of the short program a lot of the short film programs, because I really like the fact that you can see 6-7 different films in 90 minutes and gives you a really neat sort of, I don't know, broader scope of what's going on. They got 9,000 short film submissions this year that were accepted to Sundance. And that gets curated down to, I don't know, a couple hundred or something like that. But the year before, it was a lot about inclusion. You had the Me Too movement going on. And so you saw a lot of the curated subject matter was along those lines. Mm-hmm. This year, there was a lot about immigration, about just like putting yourself in other people's shoes. And so you ask yourself, was that because of the curation? Or is that because the content itself that's being made is in response to the world around us? And right. It's a combination of the two.
Right.
Where I'm going with this is, that is kind of, if you think about if there was a, if you're able to look at everything in existence and then you're able to start creating profiles and paradigms that are speaking to individuals, the insights are you'll know what to make as well. So it starts influencing the content that's actually being created and how that's not just how it's made technically, but the content itself. And then you're wrapping products into that. So it's not marketing when I want to know more about it.
Right.
So if this is, you're exploring something that's interesting to me and that happens to feature specific products because they either sponsored it in the sort of branded content type of model, or it's that product that's being featured in order to tell me more about that thing. That I think becomes more of the marketing opportunities of the future. And when you can actually have all the insights that are attached to that, that tell you how effective that is or isn't being, and then you can modulate it and iterate upon it very inexpensively because of things like real time, you find yourself in a world where there's a lot more content being directed at us that's just relevant to us. And so it's really effective marketing because I'm not feeling marketed to at all. You're just telling me more stuff that I really feel is enriching me, but you're selling me stuff at the same time. And that's really all it is. It's hearts and minds, really. Like, what's your opinion of a given thing? Mm-hmm. You didn't come up with that all on your own. It's the world around you that's given you that. It's been your experience. So I think these types of platforms unlock that potential. And that becomes really interesting at a point.
Yeah.
In terms of, I see the next level of interactive film seems like such a neat idea if it could be fully immersive. And these are places that you can plug into and sort of, it has a story around you and a world around you, just like the games that we play. I play Red Dead Redemption lately a lot. And it's a funny world to sort of be in. It's so empty too, in a lot of ways. It's like, nothing going on, but right. At the same time, it's like you can see what the next level of that will be, and all the opportunities in there. I think that's what marketing becomes.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, where do you see some of the stuff that you guys have been doing applied towards things beyond automotive in other ways? What are some of the things you guys are seeing?
I mean, cars. The reason we do cars is where we come from. But like I sort of said in the beginning, it's a great center to have, to use to develop all these different technologies.
Okay.
And then it really applies to anything across the board. I mean, cars were an easier, like the exterior of cars, if you're in the CG world, you know, the term hard surface means something in terms of it's easier to do hard surface things than soft surfaces. Mm-hmm. And the majority of the exterior of a car is a reflective hard surface. So it's always been a sort of cheap thing to produce in compared to, say, trees or, things like that. But that's all coming down because of, like you're saying, technology and hardware evolving. So you can render soft surfaces and you can render full polygon trees waving in the breeze with light shining through them and lens flares. And it's all possible now. But I think it's more just about the platform. It's like being able to iterate almost without any cost and then being able to create these immersive and dynamic platforms that you can gamify and interact with that enable you to explore more on your own as directed by you.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is the difference maker, and that will win. Because if you can start applying that to all different products ideas even, I think education's going to be one of the biggest beneficiaries of what mixed reality will bring.
Okay.
Like VR and its ability to then become more of a mixed reality that's supplementing what you're actually seeing. I think just how you interact with that, especially, younger people, if you came up with that, I think your ability to remember and learn things when you see them that way will be amplified.
Okay.
And what does that mean? Well, I think the experience you're having is actually amplified in a lot of ways in how you're able to interact with it emotionally. All those types of things. It's not necessarily the most obvious, but I think they lead us towards this future where your ability to really emotionally connect with a thing is what will be the most important aspect of any of these assets that we're creating. And I think it's possible to do that with this, with these emerging technologies.
Right. Right. Well, that's very interesting. I think it's going to be a fascinating world, of, you know, in terms of how you guys are creating this content and what's going on in that area. It's just very interesting to see like how things have changed since Felix and I were doing this shit like so long ago. You know, it was fun. Honestly, it was fun, but it was very, there was a lot of tedium to it in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys have figured out how to overcome a lot of that and just stick to the fun part.
I wish. Yep. Yeah. I wish. It's still, I mean, yes, I'll let Felix answer that, but you know, it's.
From
it's always something new. We're always pushing
always
it.
Something new.
Always something new.
I mean, there's no comparison to how I was doing it yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, by a long shot.
But that's got to be fun, though.
It is. It is very fun. It's exciting. It's really exciting.
It sounds like you guys are keep trying new things, keep pushing what's possible. And
you know, I told Dallas, is like, when I came to DG, I left the world of just creative execution. Right. Mm-hmm. Every project that I was involved with was all about making a pretty picture, mm-hmm. making it look good. And you're like, oh, this looks awesome. Yeah. High five, everybody. Now I'm in a new world where it's the opposite. It's very technical. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's very I've left the big portion of the creative side aside. And it has become about technology. Mm-hmm. How can we do this way? How can we do this that way? There's these ideas and let's put pipelines and formulas together to really execute it. And just even this last year, I'm just like, oh my God, it's been so technical, but the excitement of solving some of this and seeing it work is super exciting. Like, you know, the CG card placement platform, the first project was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then we spent some time streamlining it, defining some of the pipeline, making it faster, making it better, threw more ideas at it, improved on it. And then you execute that on a second project and it's twice as fast. And you're just like, this is awesome with a very small team. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing is a lot of CG car placements have taken a big team. Here, I would say we've eliminated more than half of that. What wow. I've been accustomed to.
Wow.
I was able to do it with a very small CG team and a very small 2D team.
Right.
But that also
your
proves
efficiency, right?
That also proves to the point. And now, you know, we're thinking, okay, what do we do next with that? Well, you know, can we render in Nuke? Mm-hmm. You know, can we do this? Can we do that?
Right.
You know, you're now adding additional steps to even make this pipeline that's already pretty efficient as to compared to what's the norm right now.
Right.
And then you're just making that even better. And that is even more exciting too, because you're just like finding more and more ways and you're just getting ahead a bit more of the game. I still talk to some of my friends and yeah, they're just like, damn.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just from the artist standpoint.
Right. Right, right, right. Well, that's really cool, guys. I mean, I know that we have a lot of ideas of things that we can, you know, just from my lab's perspective, there's a lot of stuff that I want to continue to talk to you guys about because there's some really cool ideas I have. So I know that we're going to continue to have many conversations beyond this podcast, but we were actually just over an hour, so it's been perfect. We're going to be able to talk through and really get people to understand a little bit of this world, which I think is fascinating to me. Well, I'm familiar with it, but I want to make sure that people, you know, understand that it's really kind of cool and how much it's evolved recently and where you guys are going. It sounds really, really cool. So thanks so much for joining me on this.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
All right. Thank you.